Jesse Starcher. Good evening, everybody. Tonight, we are discussing... this is another character I really don't read a whole lot about. So you get to hear me kind of talk about what happens in the book. But as for some of the stuff that's happened with the character itself, I'm here for a learning experience. And along with me on this journey is none other than the patriarch himself, Mark Radulich. Mark Radulich, sir, good evening to you. How you doing?
Good evening, sir.
We are sans. He was sans computer. Now we're sans one Ronnie Adams.
I drove him away. We cut down the last tree, and the Lorax went off to go find himself. We drove Ronnie away. Actually, I think what drove Ronnie away was last week's discussion of Slash Fiction and my encouraging of people to send him your Slash Fiction.
Oh, he's reading it. He's probably reading it right now, and he can't be bothered to do a podcast.
He's reading all about Aquaman and Flash, getting it on.
Oh my gosh. Now, the way that really went down was Ronnie Adams sends me a text that says, do we have a show tonight? And I said, yeah. And he goes, F. E-F-F. So if you know Ronnie Adams, he don't curse very often. And when he does, or at least if he alludes to it, it's done hit the fan. So he is unfortunately unable to join us this evening, which is perfectly fine. We've got a fine book to discuss. Mark Radulich's Poison Ivy, Cycle of Life and Death.
This was a 6-issue limited series, independent, all on its own. 2016.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I'm looking at it here. First on sale date, January 20th, 2016. So early 2016, this book was released. Mark, I ask you every week, man, you're the one that suggests content for the show here recently. So what do you think here? What brought you to Cycle of Life and Death? Just looking for a Poison Ivy story? Because this isn't falling in line with anything that we have going on this week, right?
No, this is connected to absolutely nothing. It's only loosely connected to the stuff we've been talking about. I mean, this whole month we've kind of been focusing on
DC.
And so loosely, June has been DC month, in celebration of Wonder Woman. But I that's literally like I just sort of accidentally did all that. Each Wonder Woman had its own thing. Flash had its own thing. And it was like, well, since we're doing those and I have it, let's go ahead and do this one too. As to how I came across Poison Ivy, The Cycle of Life and Death, I guess it was last year. Batman and Robin, the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and George Clooney, happened to be on TV. And I called my daughter over and I was like, hey, come here. I want you to watch this movie. Now, she hadn't seen the Tim Burton Batmans, and she hadn't seen the first Joel Schumacher Batman Forever. So she had no preconceived notions, but I figured this is such a bright and colorful movie. Yeah, longtime fans of Batman and grown adults hate it for whatever else. But I'm always interested in how my children are going to react to certain things that I show them, depending on how old they are and what the subject matter is. And I figured, let's see how she reacts to Batman and Robin. It's got, my daughter responds so strongly to strong female characters in anything that she watches, even like not prominently featured female characters. She could literally watch like Magic Mike and be like, and she'll be focused on some girl in the crowd.
Not the example I would have went for.
Magic Mike has a lot of men in it, is the point there. Yeah. Not that I would show my daughter Magic. Not that I would even watch Magic. Yeah, my daughter just gravitates to strong female characters. And if there aren't enough strong female characters in it, she tends to lose interest. So she watched the movie. She enjoyed it. She actually thought it was fun. And obviously she's not old enough to know how terrible it is. But she gravitated to Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy. It didn't matter that she was a villain. She just thought Poison Ivy was the bee's knees. So over the course of the next couple of months and at Christmas time, it was all about Poison Ivy toys and Poison Ivy books and Poison Ivy this and Poison Ivy that. And in my hunt for all things Poison Ivy for my daughter for Christmas, I came across this comic. And I figured it would be something that after I read it myself, it would be something that maybe I could read to her, or give to her when she was a little bit older and was able to actually read comics with any degree of excellency, I guess. I figured, let me take a look at it and, I'll have it in the house for her when she's ready for it. And as it turns out, it's actually a really good book. They did an excellent job of crafting a nice whodunit out of the story.
Why don't you take a few seconds here, if you can, and do your best to describe who Poison Ivy is,
Well, they handle Poison Ivy the same way they handled like Harley Quinn and presumably Catwoman. You know, these are all Batman villains. Poison Ivy was one of Batman's rogues gallery. They seem to, when they give them their own series, whether it's limited or not, these are characters in the midst of a life change. You know, Harley Quinn was starting over and she was moving to Coney Island, Brooklyn. And, you know, she still has some villainy qualities to her. But overall, she's trying to make amends and she's trying to do good and move on with her life. Same thing here with Poison Ivy. The story is entirely divorced from Batman. She's in the same kind of place that Poison Ivy, that the Harley Quinn was in with her series, which is, hey, I've had enough of being an arch villain. I'm trying to move on with my life. She's given an opportunity to do botanical research with this institution. She's committed. She's as committed as she's ever been to the green. She the speaks green. For the tree. She speaks for the trees.
Yeah, and Ronnie Adams is not here.
She's Mrs. Ronnie Adams. She's as committed as ever to the rights and lives of plants, but she's no longer in a place where she's going to start murdering Gothamites in order to do so. She's trying to find that happy medium because, you know, it just isn't worth it being constantly at war with Batman. So as to, you know, who she is and what she is, she can talk to plants. She can control them. She can grow them. She can shrink them. She can do, you know, when it comes to plants, she can do just about anything. And she is a committed liberal. Though she's a committed plant enthusiast, believes plants' rights are greater than people's rights, though she seems to be less of a nutcase in this series than she has been portrayed in the past.
Yeah. I think that the only real exposure that I can remember, or at least discussion about Poison Ivy, she's always been that side character in the stories that I've read. For example, Hush. When we read Batman's Hush, she was in there for probably 2 issues, I think. She was able to use her powers to overtake Superman's mind and make him fall in love with her. Therefore, Superman and Batman fought. She's pretty powerful when you think about it. I mean, if she can do that to Superman, there's a lot of, you know, there's not too many limitations to what she, there's a lot of stuff that she can do. But yeah, it's always been some kind of side character. I've never read a full-on story about Poison Ivy until we get into this book right here. So let me take a look and see if we got anything, any other notes. I do want to go ahead and give props to the creative team as usual. The story was written by Amy Chu, C-H-U.
Amy Chu, Tommy Wong. Amy Chu, Tommy Wong. Fucking Charlie Chan.
Is that your Andrew Dice Clay?
No, that's Harvey Keitel.
Oh, okay. All right.
Toby Wong, Toby Chung, fucking Charlie Chan.
Pencils. Now, this book, this series of 6 issues, was actually penciled by quite a few different artists. Clayman, Robson Roca, Steven Segovia, Julio Ferreira, Ethan Van Siver, that's a name I recognize, Al Berrienuevo, and Cliff Richards. So anyway, that's your, they ran some artists on this book. That's for sure. But that's your creative team as we go into this. Amy Chu, as for her writing capabilities, I'm sorry, it's the first time I've ever read anything by Amy. So, you know, it's a learning experience as we go and do this podcast. I always get to sample different writers. I'll remember her name from here on out. That's for sure. All right, Mark, before we get into the synopsis here, I'm going to whiz bang right through it. And then we're going to bring up some talking points. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Another example of Poison Ivy being kind of a bit player in the Batman Rogues Gallery, the Long Halloween.
You know,
she has her little bit to do. No, you're right. She's never been a major player, and she has since become more associated with other villains and, you know, as a partner, as a sort of a partner in crime. You know, again, she's one of Harley's friends. You know, she was in, I think, Gotham City Sirens. They tend to focus on her outside of villainy with Batman than they have as a, you know, she ain't the Joker or the Penguin or the Riddler. She's a second or third tier Batman villain, but she's becoming a first tier anti-hero in her own right.
Quick aside here, because I know you are a lot more knowledgeable about the TV series than I am. She appeared in, did she ever appear in the Adam West series?
No.
Okay. All right, I didn't know if she was, I'm pretty sure she was created back then, but never appeared in the Adam West series. Rest in peace, Adam West. All right. Here we go. Synopsis time. So, Poison Ivy is trying to hold down a legitimate job as Dr. Pamela Isley at the Gotham Botanical Gardens, while also attempting to further her research in plant genetics. One of the things she comes up with is a plant-human hybrid. The research that she did for this and one of the prototypes are mysteriously stolen from the gardens, coupled with some strange deaths occurring in the lab where the victims seem to have been murdered in some plant-related fashion. We are then enveloped into a murder mystery as well. Ivy also kept a couple of these plant-human hybrid prototypes at home, and by the end of issue two, these things deliver, yes, birth, two very humanoid-looking babies. As the second victim is found at Gotham Gardens, Ivy has to find a way to break into the facility to try to find her missing research, along with her new friend. Now, I'm going to pronounce this Darsh. How did I pronounce this earlier? Darshan? Fucking Tommy Wong? Charlie Chan? Darshan. We're going to go with Darshan. Her new friend Darshan and Catwoman, who helped out in breaking in as well. Now, as they infiltrate the facility, they find a young girl that has been experimented on by her boss, Victor Lee, who she determines and figures that he stole her research and did these horrible experiments. And they, in the comic, you just see like lines of failed experiments. Like it's kind of horrific in it because they're clearly got these human qualities to them, and they look like babies almost, and they're just lying there dead. But the one has lived, and Ivy is so enraged that these experiments went on that she just, as they're leaving, she brings the whole facility down in a tangled twist of plants and vines. So the Gotham Botanical Gardens / research lab, covert research lab, is no more. It has been destroyed. Now we then fast forward 25 weeks, and Rose, Hazel, and Thorn, the three sporelings that have grown at an alarming rate, appearing as human as you or I, with a few differences, mainly the powers that they possess and sometimes their skin color. Ivy has kept them in and hidden away from the public eye. But like any teenage girl, they crave to be out enjoying life. So one night, these girls decide to sneak out, causing some chaos at a local club. Luckily, Ivy is there to bring them back home. And as she brings them back home, she grounds them, which is pretty funny. I mean, these girls are like, 15, 16 years old. And she says, "You're grounded." And then she goes up to the roof and she seeks advice from the Green. So, Mark, I know you read it. And I'm just going to kind of do a quick aside here because I've got to go to DC Wiki. I didn't know what the heck the Green was. I didn't know if it was an established thing. I figured it was in DC continuity. But I have a link here to the Green, and I kind of want to explain. I want to explain what the Green is. So Ivy goes up on the roof, and here it is from DCWikia.com. "The Green is an elemental force which connects all forms of plant life on Earth, experienced by elementals as an ethereal realm inhabited by the collective minds of the Parliament of Trees." Now, that's not mentioned anywhere in this book, so don't worry about that. "Time and again, the Green has chosen protectors for itself to wield its power against threats to the Earth or from opposing elemental forces, such as the red, the clear, the gray, the rot." Sounds pretty scary. But anyway, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's a synopsis of what the Green is. All right, back to our story. So as she's searching the Green for advice, she's kind of conversing. I imagine if you were standing there, it'd probably look like she was talking to herself or something. Or maybe it's telepathic, something like that. But she's looking for advice on what to do with these girls when suddenly Ivy is attacked by her once thought dead employer from Gotham Botanical Gardens, Dr. Grimley, who now goes by the Grim. Now, see, Dr. Grimley also, he was behind. I think he was the puppeteer behind the whole stealing of Ivy's research, because what he wanted to do, he was riddled by, I think, cancer of the spine and brain. And he needed this research to try and figure out a way to abate this cancer that riddled his body. But unfortunately, it also turned him into a huge hulking plant-like monster. Now, even though he used that, the cancer has actually come back, and the Grim seeks the sporelings, the three girls, for a new, he believes he needs to use them for a new cure in order to remain alive. Now, her friend, Darshan, and sporelings jump to her aid, but to no avail. When at last, my favorite cameo of the whole book. Swamp Thing shows up to help her out. Apparently, this was the person that she was conversing with in the green. So he shows up, and we get a knockdown, drag-out fight. And after a false finish, they end up saving the day. But meanwhile, as Ivy talks to Swamp Thing, seeking more advice and saying her goodbyes, unbeknownst to her, the Sporlings, Hazel, Rose, and Thorn, run downstairs, leave the building, grab a bus ticket, say goodbye to Darshan, and they begin a journey south to save the world. Now, as to what that's about, we have no idea. We just know they left. And that's the end of the six issues. That's my brief summary of the six issues. So let's talk about it, as I say to my three-year-old son. Let's talk about it. What do you want? We want to talk about, Mark. What's one of the few things that you would like to discuss?
I really liked as a protagonist that she in earnest is trying to have a life. This isn't some part of a master plan to bop the man. She isn't raising an army of monster zucchinis that are going to help her take over the world. So peek in the brain reference for everyone.
I was going to say that's a good movie plot.
Crab people. Anyway, she really is just trying to start her life over and not be a villainous as such. So I like that element of the story. The guest appearances were fun in that, you know, they were consistent with, you know, what they've already established with her. You know, her and Harley Quinn are friends, and Harley sort of the bad influence. As a matter of fact, I think at one point she calls attention to Harley's obsession with the Joker, and Harley gets pissed about it and was like, you know what, fuck you.
Yeah.
And walks off. You know, she calls upon Catwoman at one point to help her break into some place. And then, of course, you have Swamp Thing there at the end. And Poison Ivy and Swamp Thing are both connected by the green, so that would make sense. So yeah, I like that. You know, I like that it wasn't so independent that, you know, it was separated from all the things we know about. It seemed like it was right there in continuity with everything we know about Poison Ivy.
At first, I was like, okay, she's trying to go straight. You know, she's trying to... You know, she's trying to be, she's not trying to be a villain anymore. She's trying to be a good girl. But really, I think in reality, that is not the case. I think she's just using, you know, this job and this secret identity sort of to kind of further her her research. Because all she really cares about, and they make it a point in here, is, I mean, she has, I think at the end of the first issue, after Harley shows up and they kind of split ways, she's mad. And she goes home and she's like, I'm fine. I have my plants. I don't need anybody else.
Well, that's the thing. Previously, it was raise an army of zucchinis to take over Gotham. You know, man stinks, plants rule, that kind of a thing. Or she would rob banks in order to fund her research. That was always a big trope in the Batman comics, is that they were robbing banks in order to do a greater thing. That was kind of a Mr. Freeze trope. You know, he needed money for his experiments. Where she's got a legitimate research job. The thing that connects her to her old life is she still has murderous tendencies.
Yes.
But she is trying to not murder people if she can. She still favors plants over people, but she doesn't hatch plots necessarily.
Yeah.
She is trying to live the straight life, but she still has these tendencies. And so, you know, I like that about how they drew this character, is that she's somewhat conflicted. She's not goody-goody all the time, but she is not mustache twirly villain either. She is complex.
Mm-hmm. And she makes friends with Darshan, who's a decent guy, actually a self-proclaimed super pacifist. You know, you could tell she's not completely evil, but it really struck me, I think it was issue 3, when that jerk Winston, this coworker that comes up to her loft, actually, he's outside ringing the doorbell. All she had to do was say, just screw off, man. Leave me alone. She didn't even have to open up the door. But instead, she lets this dude in. He comes upstairs with the complete intent of trying to take advantage of her, or trying to, I don't know. I think he saves her from the police at one point by kind of covering for her. And it really wasn't much of a save, because she wasn't guilty in any way. However, he decided to try and use that to his advantage and go upstairs and make her do some things. Now, it wasn't like with the intent of rape or anything. At least it didn't get that far, because Poison Ivy turned around and killed his ass.
No means no, Jesse.
Apparently. I mean, he's just being a jerk pretty much, and she didn't even have to let him in. But you could tell she was pissed. And when she let him in and he come upstairs and she let him on for a few seconds, and then next thing you know, boom, you know, Feed Me Seymour is all up in that junk and just he's done.
And really, what man hasn't been fed to a mating plant after a woman's done told him no?
What do you think of the Sporlings, man? These human plant hybrids. What do you think of them?
I thought they were fun. It's kind of a typical arc with these kinds of things, because I mean, whether they're Sporlings or some other form of rapid growth hatchlings, it's always the same thing. You know, whoever did it, they're great when they're babies, and then they get older and then they want to see the world, and there's that conflict between the parent figure and the hatchlings, because the hatchlings don't really know anything, but they're just like real people. They want to go see the world. They don't want to just stay inside the whole time. And, you know, and then of course they go out into the world and they don't know what they're doing. They're fishes out of water. Yeah, there was all of that was captured in there and expressed appropriately. That it was fine. But I think the best element of the story is the actual whodunit. When it stuck to that, I thought those were the strongest points of the whole series. When it gets away from that, I don't think it's as strong.
So who's your favorite cameo?
Oh, Swamp Thing.
Easy. Yeah, I agree 100%. Because now here's the thing. Without the knowledge of the green or anything like that, his appearance completely took me by surprise. I was just sitting there and I turned the page and all of a sudden, boom, Swamp Thing's in the mix. So that was pretty cool.
Well, unlike our Wonder Woman story from 2 weeks ago, this was completely Batman free.
It was.
You know, here we have a female protagonist. We have, other than Swamp Thing, who's sort of unisexual, we have, you know, appearances by Harley Quinn and Catwoman. This largely stands on its own. It's not propped up by any appearances by any major DC character other than, you know, the ones that I've mentioned. But even those, I mean, other than maybe Harley Quinn, who has mainstream appeal, no one's like running out to buy, you know, a Catwoman series, not in large numbers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I enjoyed the fact that they were able to take, you know, a second or third tier character, give them their own story, and let it largely live and breathe on its own.
Had you ever heard anything after this or involving the Sporlings at all?
No. I mean, I bought the book. I got the book for Christmas, and I waited till now to read it because, you know, we did it this summer, and I haven't really gone and done any ancillary research around it.
I don't think I've heard anything either. I mean, they go down south to save the world.
Well, it doesn't matter. After fucking Rebirth, everything changes.
That's the truth. It's kind of weird that they just kind of stick that out there. Poison Ivy actually has kids, which, what do you think? Okay, if you could write a story about the Sporlings, give us what you'd do with them.
I think I'd set it in the rainforest of Brazil, you know, and I would have them taking on, you know, a logging company, you know, someplace that was like strip mining the Amazon, strip mining the rainforest, make it a deeply eco-friendly type story. We're like, oh no, you know, the evil corporation LexCorp or something is strip mining this rainforest, and, you know, and they go in and stop it, and, you know, and the company starts sending superpowered villains after them, and they get their ass kicked because they're not used to using their powers, or, you know, up to this point using their powers has been easy, but now they're facing, you know, trained assassin type, you know, superpowered individuals, and they get their asses kicked, and, you know, the suggestion, hey, we need to go get mommy, you know, Poison Ivy, and it's like, no, she'll just make us come home, we have to do this on our own. And, you know, and they end up maybe partnering up with another figure from the DC universe, another lesser known figure.
Some young kids or something.
Yeah. Or maybe they partner up with Swamp Thing again. Mm-hmm. You know, Swamp, you know, while they're licking their wounds, you know, Swamp Thing maybe like, or they get, you know, they get their asses kicked, but Swamp Thing shows up and saves them and brings them into the green. You know, and he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to help you with this company and Sporlings and the Swamp Thing and an all-out assault on LexCorp. And
if I were to utilize them, okay, we'd be running 2 years on out, okay, from this story. And then Poison Ivy's involved in, like, this huge battle or something like that. And then as she is just about to be defeated, she's down, you know, she's down on her luck, and then somebody shows up to finish her off, and it's the three Sporlings. They've turned on their mama. Now, instead of them being good guys, they're villains. Of course, the child's going to resent the mother.
Okay. You know, I think the best way to handle that would be they're part of the Suicide Squad.
Ooh. Ooh.
And it's not so much they've turned evil, it's that if they don't do what Amanda Waller says, they're going to have their heads blown off.
Oh, that's good stuff. Good stuff. I'm looking to see if there has been anything since... I'm going to head back over to DC Wikia here just to see if there's anything with the Sporlings. I don't think there is. Let's go to the next one. Let me look at number two. Sporlings, Rose, Hazel. The cool thing is I can go to five appearances of Hazel. All right. Let me guess. They're all in five issues of the six. Indeed, they are. Cycle of Life. Wow, so they've not used them since. I mean, of course, this just happened last year. So we've got a while. All right. Last topic, Mark. Now, this story is called Cycle of Life and Death. You got any parables or anything that you'd like? Any way to kind of tie that together with the story that we read?
I think the ultimate goal of what the experiments they were working on was the extension of life. And there's the creation of the artificial creation of life and the Sporlings. And then you have the death and all these murders. You also have the idea of the Sporlings have only a limited lifespan and they're going to die.
Mm-hmm. I think Swamp Thing pops in and he was talking about how the Grim, or Dr. Grimley, who was doing those experiments to extend his own life, was somehow violating this cycle that is believed, or, you know, is observed by people like Swamp Thing and Poison Ivy. As humans, are we violating any type of natural law by trying to find ways?
Think of it like this. There are 10 sandwiches, okay? There are 10 sandwiches and 5 people. And those 5 people breed another 5 people. Now you have 10 people and 10 sandwiches. If the second group of 5 people breed another 5, you'll have 15 people.
Yep.
But you still only have 10 sandwiches, which means 5 people have to die.
Somebody's got to die. Somebody, right. Yeah.
But if you don't, and you just keep breeding people, now you've got 20 people and still only 10 sandwiches. That's 10 people with no sandwiches. And this just keeps going. You know, there was an article that I study a lot about, like, Social Security, and my father and I have talked at great length about, you know, the services that are out there versus the populations for them. You know, like, Social Security used to be great because there was enough out there for the people that were going to need it, and there were plenty of people in the workforce. Now we don't have nearly as many people in the workforce, but we have, you know, 10 times as many people who need Social Security. And so the whole equation's out of balance. And Reagan stole the Social Security fund, but that's a podcast for another day. But, you know, we talk about the amount of resources that are out there for people, but that's highly dependent on a cycle of death where, you know, the older population dies out, you know, and the younger population is able to claim those resources that are now left up for grabs, except that older people are living longer and longer. There was an article on Time about how a lot of medications out there are extending life. Well, you know, people on average die in their 80s, but with the medication that's out there and that's coming down the line, people live into the 90s and in their hundreds. We're back to the sandwich problem again.
Yeah, you're going to run out of resources in order for people to continue to live.
Right.
We struggle with that. I mean, it is a constant struggle trying to figure out a way to live longer, be immortal.
You have to do what my friend Gary Foster said, and that's put old people in the grinder.
Put them in the grinder and feed them?
No, just put them in the grinder and turn them into sausage.
Okay, and then are we going to – that'll save some food problems.
That will. when we were in high school, he used to write music about killing old people. One song was, you know, put them in the grinder. Another song was called Bake the Fucking Old.
Nice.
Yes.
He's coming up with solutions, is I think what a lot of people would say. No, that's horrible. It's called Cycle of Life and Death. I really don't think there's much of a statement in this, as much as I try to. There's not much of a statement there in these 6 issues about that.
No, I think it's just a fun story. I think the editors at DC are trying to throw shit at the wall to see what sticks or stinks, as the case may be. And I think, you know, they have these characters. And it's just like, you know, look, they can write 6 different Batman comics, but eventually people, you know, need something else besides Batman to read, and they need to sell comics. So why not experiment with different characters and give them stories, compelling stories? And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, Marvel does the same thing. Marvel gave a talking tree that just says I Am Groot its own series.
It's true.
based on the popularity of the character. Now, I have not read Groot, but I'm desperate. I desperately want to, because like I got to know, how do you come up with a story, a compelling narrative with a character whose only lines are "I am Groot," in that order?
That's true.
So why not do a story about Poison Ivy? Why not do a story about Catwoman? Why not do a story about anyone that's willing to, you know, this is the free market. If people are willing to buy in large enough numbers to make it worth producing, why not, you know, just tell stories.
Throw it out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell stories. Well, last question I have for you here. There were a lot of artists on these six issues. Did you notice, was that something that you noticed a change in as we went through the issue? Okay.
No.
All right. There was, I think, maybe one panel where I was like, whoa, wait a second. Something's different here, but nothing that really took me out. So that's good.
Yeah. I only know two things about art. It's good or bad.
It's well, and it's important that it definitely does not, you know, conflict with what we'd seen. Like an issue one, and then all of a sudden issue two, things look way different than, and I mean way different. If that was to occur, then we'd have something to gripe about. But they do a fine job in keeping, number one, they keep the story flowing. And number two, they keep the character designs and everything is perfectly fine as they switch artists. So a good job in doing that, in my opinion. As a matter of fact, I think on a couple issues, there were more than one artist per issue, which is pretty interesting. But regardless, they did a good job. So, all right, Mark, give it a rating here. Let's hear what the Mark Radulich rating system is. First, you said art was fine. You got a number 4 out of 5.
I would say both art and story are 4 out of 5.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I could tell you that I enjoyed reading it. I didn't think it was a horrible story in any way. I think it's great that they introduced some new characters. Gotta like that.
Is your daughter into comics at all? Is this something that you can give her to read? You know, I'm always on the lookout for, you know, because I said my daughter gravitates to anything with a strong or weak, for that matter, female character. Do you look for, not role models as such, but stuff that shows women in sort of a leadership role, you know, a starring role for her to absorb?
She doesn't have a comic preference right now. I could tell you that she would probably rather read something silly and funny before she would pick up something and go, oh yeah, this is about some strong woman character. You know, when we covered Phoebe and her unicorn, which was a couple years back on Father's Day, that was one comic that she made me read. She wanted me to read it. And all it was really just a bunch of comic strips put together of this little girl and her imaginary unicorn. She loved it. So I know that she enjoys, that's the one thing I know she enjoys. She enjoys reading silly stuff. If I gave her Poison Ivy Cycle of Life and Death, I don't know if she'd have an opinion one way or the other, to be honest. I think she would probably look at it and read it and then be like, oh, okay, yeah. Trying to think. You know,
the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Never heard her mention one word about that. You know what she's watching right now?
What?
She's in the middle of watching Riverdale. And okay. Yeah, so she enjoys...
You Starkers and your horror. My goodness.
She enjoys a good, like... What's a Gossip Girl? I don't know if you know much about that show.
I know it existed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much all I know. I just know my little Kira watched Gossip Girl. She watches Pretty Little Liars.
She likes her teenage thrillers.
There you go. That's exactly it. That's the kind of stuff she's reading now. So
you couldn't pay me to watch Riverdale,
dude. Talk to Ronnie Adams. He speaks for the trees, but he has been involved in some Riverdale here recently. He sent me it was so funny. He sends me a message. He's like, I just started. Actually, I think we talked about it on this podcast. He's like, I just started the first episode. So anyway, he tells me he starts the second episode that night. The next morning, Kira comes running in. She goes, Dad, I got to tell you about this show I'm watching. So what are you watching? I'm watching Riverdale. So now she got to the point today where she was like, I want to tell you a spoiler every day until you start watching it. And I was like, don't do that. That's shitty. If I start to watch the show and I already know so-and-so's pregnant or so-and-so's dead, I want to be pissed. There's no sense.
I have a new show that just started, actually. There's two episodes so far. The third episode is June 18th. I don't know if you get Showtime at all or get access to Showtime. Showtime anytime. But there's a show called, it's about comedy in the 70s, which is a
Oh boy.
As far, yeah, it's one of those things that I'll read books about. I love reading about the history of stand-up comedy, and especially like comedy in Los Angeles in the 70s. Oh, I could be steeped in that all day long. But the show is about that, and it's called I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, and I think you may have shared that on Facebook, and I was wondering about that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I watch other stuff besides superheroes, folks. Well, I needed something after I binge watched Orange is the New Black in one day.
Holy shit.
Yep, I was useless.
Nice.
I checked out of being a parent.
Sorry, kid.
Raise yourself. Here's $5 and a football. Raise yourself.
Go get an icy.
But yeah, I'm Dying Up Here. It's actually, the first episode's a little depressing, but overall, I'm really enjoying it so far.
Is it fictional, or is it actually about?
I mean, it's based on a book about that era.
Okay.
So I don't know if anybody in it's a real person, or if they're just sort of fictionalized versions of real people. But I do know that the period that they're talking about, you know, the hungry, you know, 70s era of comedy, you know, where people were going to these particular clubs and having to do like open mics, and you know, and it was like the height, you know, it was the pinnacle from the pinnacle to the pit. It was the pinnacle to get on like Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm. There was a great documentary I watched a while back on Johnny Carson, and man, that was a that whole era of comedians and that came onto that show that he grew up in and brought on. Just fantabulous.
Sure, you made people that way. If you got on Johnny Carson, it was you know, you were big time.
You made, boy.
Yep.
All right. Well, yeah, I enjoyed the story. We talked about the Sporlings. Hey, some new characters brought up in this book. And for my first ever real Poison Ivy story, I will give it a thumbs up. I enjoyed it very much. So what do we got on the schedule there, Mark Radulich? We got anything upcoming here on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network?
Well, next week is IWP, IGP, ICP.
Juggalos unite.
We got Revolution.
That's right. IDW.
Revolution. Yes. The Revolution is next.
I got to put a call out too, by the way. I need to see if we can get a guest for that.
But that's what we got going on over the next couple of weeks. We got Revolution for the week of Transformers. We got Kraven's Last Hunt with Godo Benjamin Cologne. And then we're going to do another Spider-Man story the week of the, you know, when Spider-Man comes out, featuring the Vulture, hopefully. We got Tarzan and the Planet of the Apes. When the Planet of the Apes movie comes out.
That's right. Well, so you got that. Have you read it yet?
No, I just got it in the mail the other day.
Okay. All right.
I don't read this stuff until we're ready to record it.
Oh, man. That's Radulich life for me. So much shit on your plate that you can't get to it until like 20 minutes before the show. I've been there.
I usually when I take my kids to the Y, that's my reading time.
There you go.
Well, my kids like swim lessons, I'll read shit. But over the next couple of months, you know, we're gonna look at a Daredevil book. You, at the end of this year, when the new Punisher series comes out on Netflix, need to pick a Punisher book.
Ooh, I can do that. Oh man, I would love to do. If we have to do something to tie it in with the series, it's probably gonna be tough for me to do. I'm sure there's something out there, but there are quite a few great Punisher stories. The one where he first met Wolverine was like the first time I really geeked out in fandom, where I was like, holy crap, it's Wolverine and Punisher meeting for the first time. And it was, I thought it was an epic fight. I guarantee, though, it was only two issues, and, you know, 20-some years later, it probably does not hold up. But regardless, I remember geeking out as a kid.
I want to say that the Punisher series is actually based on
Welcome Back, Frank. Is that what you're
maybe
thinking?
Maybe that's what I'm, yeah.
Okay, so there we go. All right, we'll check it out. I mean, I know that Welcome Back, Frank, Garth Ennis, buddy, I'll tell you right now, great. Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon are a great pair. They did Preacher, which I know you've not ever, have you even watched the show or one of the shows at all? Okay, well, it was a good series, and this is some good stuff. We'll check it out. All right, what's next? After that riveting piece.
Anyway, so yeah, we've got Inhumans. We've got the Inhumans book, or when that series comes out, when the pilot goes to the IMAX theater, we'll do that. So we got a lot of stuff lined up throughout the year. There are definitely going to be some weeks where I can give Jesse his show back, but you can pick your own damn topics.
I can't wait.
But
it's going to be, it's on me, unreal. I get a hold of my podcast again.
Yep. Oh, and we just made a switch today. We're doing a week just dedicated to Daredevil, not because of the series or anything like that. I just picked a random week, and originally we were going to do some stuff related to Frank Miller, but I don't have the time or the patience to get through all that Sin City stuff. So we're going to scrap that, but we'll keep the Daredevil stuff, and we're going to look at the Kevin Smith pen Guardian Devil. So look for that.
Have you ever? I know summer. I know Ronnie mentioned that, but have you ever heard of it before?
No, not
okay.
Not
I can't wait. I can't wait till you read it.
Okay. So as far as other stuff happening, last week we looked at Dream Evil 6 on the Metal Hammer of Doom. This week I'm taking the week off. Last week, we reviewed Wonder Woman. We did an on trial for Superman Returns, where we had special guest Alexis Sasana. We had a special witness, a surprise witness.
Come on to the show. She called to the stand.
Yes. She happened to call Sean about an unrelated thing, and then Sean just put her on the show.
Nice.
So we went like another hour past when I wanted to do the show, but that's okay.
We love dragging you through the mud there, Mark. I'm taking you, making you suffer.
This week, we got a double dose of TV parties. We're going to go to Flashpoints, Flash Season 3. And then we're going to look at Orange is the New Black Season 5. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up. And then we got Transformers Week at the end of the month. I got that Revolution book. I got a review of Transformers the last night. We're going to look at Transformers, the cartoon movie soundtrack. And then finally, we're going to do an on trial for – no, sorry. We're going to do a TV party tonight for Transformers Prime Season 1.
All right. Very good. Very good. I give you a hard time, Mark. I love talking comics with you, man. I appreciate you bringing the content and giving us something to talk about. It's a lot of fun. Number one, to be able to sit down and read a comic book. That should be tops on anybody's agenda. But to be able to discuss it with friends and somebody – I know you're not the biggest – comic book nerd, and I appreciate you coming on here every once in a while and putting up with our antics. So,
oh, hey, that reminds me. Speaking of twisting your arm and making you talk about things you don't really want to talk about, DC and Looney Tunes have put together a couple of joint ventures, like yes. Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter. And because I'm a sadist and I'm like making people uncomfortable, I'm making Jesse and Ronnie talk about them.
Oh man, if all Judge Presiding Josh Calandros is able to do podcasts at some point. I know he's in the midst of a move and doing all sorts of other stuff, but our concept of having him judge picking the best one, that I really hope it comes true, but because he hates the whole concept of that, the whole concept of merging Looney Tunes and DC characters and having them interact. And did you see the few panels? I don't know if you did or not, but there's a few panels that
Batman and Elmer Fudd. It looks
yes.
fantastic.
I mean, come on. Wow.
I haven't been this excited and this set up to be let down since Wacky Raceland.
Dude, if number one, the writers that are on these things, specifically Tom King, has been proven gold on just about anything he touches. That's one thing that I was hoping Calandros would have to give into. Tom King's writing it. I've got to read it, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I can't wait, man. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. So I know we said there was Superman, Bugs Bunny. There's Batman and Batman Elmer and Elmer Fudd. We had
Lobo and the Roadrunner.
Okay.
Yosemite Sam and what's the cowboy's name?
Jonah Hex?
Jonah Hex, yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's right.
Wonder Woman and the Tasmanian Devil and Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian.
Martian. Oh, my gosh. Do you think
I'm so excited for this.
I'm curious as to what the plot is for the Martian Manhunter, Marvin the Martian thing is. I mean, and how they try to fit it, if they try to fit it in DC continuity. Oh, boy. All right.
Well, clearly the plot's going to be that the Earth blocks Marvin's view of Venus.
He's and he going wants to blow it up. I hope they have a special appearance of that big Sasquatch monster. It gets a hold of Bugs Bunny every time, and he's like, hey, George. Yeah.
The abominable snowman.
Yes, please. I hope he's in there. All right, I'm done. All right. Are you done?
Oh, I'm so done.
Oh, he's so done. All right. Again, Mark Radulich, thanks for coming on here. Folks, go give that Radulich and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. I'm not going to bore you guys with a whole lot of plugs tonight. Just check out whatever Mark talked about. Maybe go on to the Radulich and Broadcasting Facebook page or go take a search just in Google. Bring up about any podcast you can if you just search Radulich. Also, give a thought, give some consideration to throwing our patriarch a little bit of cash his way and get yourself a snazzy shirt in the process. Represent.com/fightrattle. Each fight will take you to it's a link to get you the shirt. $25 for a shirt. Check it out. Give us some thought, ladies and gentlemen. Help support our man in his battle through cancer here. That's
it. Won't you help a fellow American who's down on his luck?
Down on his luck. I'm Jesse Starcher. You can follow me at Stiznarky on Twitter. The show's Twitter is at SourceMattCast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for putting up with our stuff. Thank you. And, oh, wait a second. Mark, I gotta find the end button. Where's that? There it is. Thank you, and good night. Pump it up.